If you're interested in listening ad-free, go to patreon.com/drnosleep. There you can enjoy my ad-free podcast and never have to listen to ads again. That's patreon.com/drnosleep. Now time for the story.
Dr. No Sleep.
Like a flip had been switched, the team fell into formation, tactically moving into the hallways at impressive speeds without speaking another word. With Jackson himself in the lead, we listened intently for any signs of movement as we proceeded to the first open door. Jackson got ready to jump around the corner with his rifle raised. But before he could move into position, something pounced at him from the darkness, pushing him to the floor. On top of him sat a clearly humanoid creature, one horrifically mangled. It was a mess of flesh and anatomical rearranged structures completely incompatible with life. Broken bones protruded from its chest, with its arms appearing as shredded tangles of flesh. Though there were clear human aspects to the creature, whatever humanity had once resided within it had long since been exterminated. Without hesitation, the crew fired upon the beast, trying to get Jackson a chance to get up and dive for cover. Though the bullets easily penetrated its flesh, the creature refused to fall. Our only solace was that the damage appeared to distract the hybrid enough for Jackson to slither away, getting back on his feet as he stared at the creature in terror.
"Don't wait for my command! Take that thing down!"
he yelled. More of the doors shot open, with hybrids emerging from every room, each more broken than the last. They rushed down the hall towards us, with no regard for their own safety, as a hailstorm of bullets ravaged their flesh. But the damage we caused meant nothing to them. In the single minute we'd been there, it had become all too apparent how ineffective our weapons were in fighting these things.
"We are leaving, right now!"
Jackson ordered.
"Everybody, fall back to the stairwell!"
Covering our backs, Jackson let the rest of the team retreat, keeping an ongoing storm of suppressive fire. Though it slowed them down, they'd already caught up with us by the time we reached the door. With Jackson being the last man to leave, one of the creatures managed to slash his leg with its bony protrusion. He yelped as he fell to his knees, fighting back with his bare hands.
"Sarge!"
Cameron yelled as he ran to his aid. But by the time he reached him, the creature stabbed Jackson through his chest, the bony appendage even reaching Cameron's hip, maiming him as well.
"No!"
Cameron let out in despair as his sergeant fell dead on the floor before him. Marion and I grabbed onto Cameron, carrying him up the stairs as the creatures remained distracted by their kill.
"We can't leave him!"
Cameron cried as we pulled him, refusing to accept that the man was long gone. Having wounded his hip, it took two of us to get him up the stairs. Though he wasn't the largest man I'd ever met, he was muscular, carrying heavy equipment. It took everything we had to get him back up to the top floor, where we dove into the upper corridor, sealing the stairwell behind us. Using any means we could, we formed a makeshift barricade out of all the furniture and equipment not bolted to the floor.
"What the hell are those things?"
Burns asked in shock.
"That was the fucking crew, or what remains of them,"
Connolly explained.
"They killed Jackson!"
Cameron cried.
"Fuck!"
With a barrier between us and the monsters, we walked out on deck and attempted to establish contact with our freighter.
"This is Zeta Team reporting,"
Marion spoke into the radio.
"We've taken casualties. Sergeant Jackson is dead. I repeat, we've taken casualties."
It took a few moments before the radio scurried back to life with a response. A static-filled, barely intelligible message was sent back.
"Understood. Return to the freighter immediately."
The radio operator, Dawson, responded.
"We're on our way,"
Marion said.
"We're carrying wounded. Alert the surgeon. Tell him to prep the OR."
We rushed to the starboard side of the ship, ready to descend into our dinghies and flee into the fog. But as we peered over the side down into the ocean, we were shocked to realize that our only means of transport had gone missing.
"Where the hell are they?"
Burns asked.
"Someone took our fucking boats?"
Connolly half asked, half stated.
"Who?"
I asked.
"There was no one else left alive on the ship."
Not wasting time discussing the matter, Marion grabbed her radio again and contacted the freighter with an evacuation request.
"This is Zeta Team. Our transport is down. Requesting immediate extraction. Send a chopper to the RV Boreas."
Our plea for help was met with another moment of silence before finally receiving a response.
"Negative. Extraction by air unavailable. Does the RV Boreas have any functioning lifeboats on board?"
Dawson asked.
We've been sabotaged. We have no means of escape. We need extraction now.
Copy that. Transport by sea available. The team is on their way to pick you up. ETA, 90 minutes.
Dawson said.
90 minutes?
Marion let out.
It took us less than half that time to get here.
Best we can do. The ice has shifted. We'll be with you as soon as we can. Good luck.
By the time we called for an evac, the sun was setting behind the thick layer of fog, causing the entire sky to slowly darken. In about an hour, night would set in, forcing us to constantly fight in the dark.
What now?
I asked.
We'll hold out on the bridge. Easiest place to board up with a view of the deck. We should be safe there.
Marion ordered, having seamlessly taken charge in the absence of Jackson. The four of us carried our hurt team member upstairs to the bridge. Once there, I could finally start tending to Cameron's wound. He'd been hit in the hip, with a deep gash extending across his thigh. Though no major vessels appeared to be damaged, the wound didn't look great. He'd need major surgery just to put the muscles back in place. But what concerned me the most was the damage to his suit. He'd been directly exposed to the environment, and we hadn't the faintest idea what kind of implications that brought along. All I could do then and there was to make sure he didn't bleed and manage the pain as best I could.
How are you holding up?
I asked him.
Fucking hurts. How bad is it? Oh, it's bad. But it's not real bad.
I said calmly, in a half-joking manner to ease the tension. An attempt that failed miserably. I cut his trousers open to get a better look, preparing to give him a dose of morphine when I noticed odd discoloration around the wound edges. They'd turned black, with a strange layer of exudate, similar to the moldy appearance of the body we'd found in the infirmary. But only minutes had passed since the attack. He couldn't possibly show signs of infection that quickly.
What's wrong?
Cameron asked, noticing the puzzled expression on my face.
The wound,
I began, not knowing what to say. My worry prompted Marion to inspect the damage herself. She bent down and glanced at the black substance, immediately recognizing the severity of the situation.
What?
Cameron pleaded.
Don't leave me hanging. It's infected,
I said. Cameron froze up with panic in his eyes. Having fought the monstrosity that killed Jackson, and having witnessed the flesh in the basement, no one could know for sure what route the infection would take.
That thing? What's going to happen to me? I'm sorry, I don't know,
was all I could say. Marion grabbed his hand and locked eyes with him.
Don't go soft on me now. We'll get you back to the freighter, and the surgeon will fix you right up. The docs didn't help the crew here much,
Cameron said, his worry evident.
Come on, Cameron. You've never been one to admit defeat. You're the most stubborn bastard I know. Stay focused, stay alive,
she ordered. I pulled the laboratory journal out to get a better idea of what to expect, skimming through the pages. They were mostly filled with lab results and tests performed on various tissues. Only once I reached the very end of the book did I find a few pages describing the disease progression and prognosis. While I tried to get smart on the subject, Burns and Connolly stood guard. Marion remained by Cameron's side, tending to the wound as best she could. The deck outside seemed quiet, and with each passing minute, the sky got darker. The notes were brief, but informative. They described four distinct phases of the disease, which had been coined acute skin-wasting disease, based on its very first symptom, charring of the skin. The stages were as follows. Stage 1, cutaneous molting. Stage 2, cutaneomuscular degeneration. Stage 3, central nervous decay. Stage 4, organ reconfiguration. The first stage, cutaneous molting, presented itself with black marks around the wound edges. Surrounding the spots, the patient would experience paresthesia, more commonly described as numbness. Depending on the depth of the wound, the first stage could last between a couple of hours or even days if the cuts were superficial. Based on Cameron's open gash, I suspected the disease would progress rather quickly. Despite suffering a catastrophic loss, our spirits remained as high as reasonably possible regarding an expected rescue. An hour had passed since boarding ourselves up within the bridge, and there had been no signs of hostile activity. Our barricade, though primitive, had served its purpose. Cameron tried to remain positive, having entered a subfebrile state. Curiously, with the paresthesia setting in, the pain had started to fade as the black marks spread across his skin. Marion stood in a corner, impatiently trying to contact our freighter via radio, but they'd gone silent shortly after promising a not-so-swift rescue.
Son of a bitch,
she muttered to herself as she checked the radio frequency for the nth time. With day giving ground to night in its blanket of darkness, we could barely see anything down on deck. But in spite of the darkness, everything seemed calm. We had no choice but to patiently await extraction, with no other means of escaping the ship. But I worried if Cameron would hold out for that long. Though he couldn't feel it at that moment, there was an unknown disease ravaging through his body. Upon inspection of his wound, I could already tell he had entered the second stage, with his severed muscles turning black with infection. Once ASWD entered his bloodstream, I feared there was no way to bring him back from the brink of death. As we ended the second hour of our wait, without any sign of rescue, we started to worry. Despite numerous attempts, Marion had not yet been able to establish contact with the freighter, which meant that either we were being ignored or something had happened to them. By all means, we were trapped.
I don't feel too good,
Cameron groaned.
There's something wrong with my stomach. Hey, Doc, isn't there anything you can do?
Burns asked.
I've already given him a second shot of morphine,
I explained.
Short of numbing the pain, there's nothing I can do. What about the medical bay?
Burns continued.
They might have supplies we could use.
I looked to Marion for confirmation, but she left the decision in my hands as the only semi-medically trained individual on board.
Could it help him?
Marion asked.
Maybe, but there's no way we can transport him safely over there. If the creatures get out, we'd be too slow to escape,
I explained.
Then we'll bring the stuff here,
Burns demanded.
I'll go with the doc. He'll pick out the stuff. I'll make sure we all get back safely. These bastards are locked down below deck anyway.
Knowing his inherent distrust for me, I was surprised that Burns had volunteered to go alone on a mission with me. His concern for his friend outweighed his dislike for me, but I still wasn't convinced. Nevertheless, Marion accepted the suggestion, letting the two of us seek out medical supplies while she and Connolly watched over Cameron and kept an eye out for our evac team.
All right, Doc, let's go,
Burns practically ordered, taking the lead as we walked back down on the deck. Through the fog, we could just barely see the outline of a full moon hanging above us, throwing gentle light without shadows onto the deck. It was oddly quiet, considering the number of hybrids we had locked inside down in the bows of the ship, but even they didn't appear to attempt an escape. I followed Burns into the main hallway, my pistol firmly clenched in my hand. We carefully crossed the still intact barricade towards the infirmary in the back. The state of the place had changed since we last set foot inside, with the black substance covering an even greater area. The doctor's corpse still lay in the corner, his intestines having spilled out onto the floor, almost fusing with the surface. Knowing none of the tools in there could cure Cameron, I instructed Burns on what to look for. He diligently followed orders, putting all requested items in a medical supply box.
He's not gonna make it, is he?
Burns asked.
What makes you say that?
I asked back.
A look in your eyes as you read the lab notes. It's not a disease known to man. Hell, might not even be terrestrial. If you think he's already dead, why did you volunteer to come get the supplies with me?
I kept pushing.
Privacy. We all saw what happened down below. Those things weren't foreign creatures. They used to be the crew. If Cameron ends up going in the same direction and ends up losing his mind, how do we handle the situation?
Listening to Burns' reasoning, I paused to look at the infected corpse on the ground. It was a mere husk of a former human being, inhabited by creatures we didn't yet understand. I wondered why it hadn't turned hostile like the rest of the crew, but seemed content with expanding along the ground, attaching to walls and furniture. Which route would Cameron's disease take?
What are you suggesting?
I finally asked.
Even if rescue comes, we can't take him with us,
Burns explained.
It's an obvious truth, but it's not one the others are ready to hear. But I am.
Our trip down to the infirmary had been little more than a ruse to get me alone, but we kept loading up equipment that might at the very least ease Cameron's suffering. As we sealed the box up, burned side.
You're a doctor, and you're an outsider. I figured if anyone could understand, it would be you.
Though I could see where he was coming from, I wasn't sure we'd be able to convince the others in the grim case that we'd have to abandon the poor man. But before we could contemplate the matter any further, our radio rang to life.
Burns, are you there?
Marion's voice called. Picking up the radio, he answered with a confused expression on his face.
What's going on?
Cameron isn't doing good. We need Teague back right now.
We're coming,
Burns said, putting the radio back on his belt. I had estimated a sped-up progression of the disease due to the sheer depth of the wound, but even then, I hadn't expected him to enter the third stage within hours of the primary infection.
Time is running out,
Burns said.
And if he turns, we're next.
We rushed back to the bridge, noticing a slight shift in the barricade as we passed. It looked like something had tried to push through but given up halfway. Having no time to reinforce it, we kept moving. Connolly stood on the outside staircase, keeping an eye on deck. He waved frantically as he saw us, telling us to hurry. We ran upstairs to find a delirious Cameron lying on the floor, alternating between screaming in agony and begging for help.
Get them out of me!
He yelled as he clawed at his own chest, trying to tear through his suit. Knowing the man had already been exposed to the infectious environment, I bent down to cut open his suit just to see what was bothering him so much. Once I'd torn open the suit, I immediately jumped back from a mixture of disgust and shock. Underneath his skin, we could see what appeared to be worm-like creatures twisting and turning.
It hurts!
He groaned.
Cut them out!
Having read the brief notes in the doctor's journal, I knew that Cameron had jumped straight to the end stage of ASWD, organ reconfiguration. The moving figures inside his skin weren't worms, but blood vessels having gained a mind of their own. At that stage, there was nothing we could do short of putting the man out of his misery. I gave him an extra dose of morphine, but with his veins no longer functioning, there was no effective circulatory system to bring the medication through his body. Short of a bullet to the head, nothing would work at numbing the pain.
Do something!
Marion yelled.
I can't,
I said, defeated. Then, with one final, blood-curdling scream, Cameron's skin started splitting open from the wound on the leg, up to his abdomen and chest. Bizarrely shaped organs and vessels spilled out onto the floor, wriggling around as they latched onto the floor, spreading along up the walls. Cameron, still conscious, tried to scream, but there was no air left in his lungs to produce a voice. Burns finally took the initiative, walked up to Cameron, raised his rifle, and fired a single bullet to his head. The light immediately faded from his eyes, but even with his brain shredded, the rest of him remained alive, with his innards still wriggling around. The body was no longer his to control, but at least he wouldn't be able to feel it any longer.
Everyone out!
Marion ordered, basically pushing us out from the bridge before sealing the door behind us. We rushed down onto the deck, none of us daring to look behind at the horrors Cameron had turned into. Already knowing it wouldn't work, Marion made another futile attempt at contacting the freighter, an attempt met with deafening silence.
Fuck!
She cursed.
What the hell are we supposed to do? Where are they?
Connolly asked.
I don't know,
Marion began.
Well, we're not staying here a moment longer.
We stayed put for a moment, desperately trying to come up with another viable move. After a minute of contemplation, Marion turned to Connolly.
Do you think you can fix the lifeboats?
She asked.
I don't know. Depends on the extent of the damage. But it's gonna take time. Beat sitting around, waiting to end up like these things.
Burns chimed in.
How hard can it be, fixing a damn boat? That's good enough for me. We're getting the fuck off the ship. Let's go.
Marion ordered. There were two lifeboats on either side of the ship. While the ones on the starboard side were beyond repair, we still hadn't assessed the ones on the port side. Our only hope was to find a semi-intact raft that Connolly could work on. The first boat we inspected was a wreck, with the engine within stripped out entirely. We quickly determined it to be a lost cause, before moving on to the second boat, which had suffered some damage to its hull, but appeared otherwise unharmed. Though the repairs might not withstand the bumpy ride through the ice, it remained the far better option.
Can you fix it?
I asked. Connolly sighed.
Yeah, I think so. but it'll take time. It's not like we have reservations anywhere,
Arian said sarcastically.
Get to work. Burns and I will patrol the deck. Teague, stay with Connolly. Assist him where you can.
There were crates of tools and supplies lying around the deck, meant to maintain the ship, but worked just as well in the lifeboats. Connolly got to work fixing the exterior, doing his best to assure our ability to stay buoyant. I mostly held tools and searched for extra parts, hoping to get out of this nightmare as soon as possible.
Do you think the Sarge is still alive?
Connolly asked after a long bout of silence.
Alive? We saw him get torn apart right in front of us,
I explained.
Yeah, I know,
Connolly began.
But what if he's not really dead? I mean, what if he's one of them? Cameron survived his body splitting open. It wasn't until Burns shot him in the head before he finally stopped trying to scream. I didn't really think of that,
I admitted.
I hope he's not. That's what I've been thinking about. I'm not going to let us suffer the same fate. Marion and I both have the detonators for the explosives we planted in the engine room. If we get overrun by these things, I will pull the trigger. Better to blow up than to become one of them.
I nodded in agreement. But though I knew he was right, I wasn't ready to give up hope just yet. After 30 minutes of repairs, Marion and Burns returned from their patrol, letting us know the coast was clear.
How's it looking?
Marion asked.
Found all the parts. Gonna take another 30 minutes, though. Any luck contacting the freighter?
Connolly asked.
Not a word. We're on our own.
We'd all been thinking what the lack of communication meant, but none of us were ready to say it out loud. Either something had happened to the freighter, or they knew what we'd discover on board this ship, meaning we were sent as bait for the hybrids. The silence was only shattered when we heard a series of metallic thumps coming from inside the ship's walls.
Did anyone hear that?
I asked.
It came from the stern,
Connolly said.
Burns, Teague, you're with me. Connolly, keep working the raft,
Marion ordered, taking us with her to investigate the sound.
It's them, isn't it?
Burns asked, fear evident in his voice. But neither of us bothered responding. Whatever would meet us at the end of the ship, we'd fight it to our last breaths. For each step closer to the stern, the intensity of the thumps increased. Then, as the wall couldn't possibly extend any further, the thumping was replaced by the distant sound of bending metal. A bang was heard as a piece of metal broke apart, and we all shot to attention with the same realization, sending a sense of dread through our bodies.
They're in the vents!
I gasped.
Teague, Burns, get back to Connolly. Tell him to get the raft in the ocean, now!
Marion ordered as she held her rifle raised, pointed at the wall where the thumps were originating. A metal panel had been bent outwards from the wall, serving as an exit point for the ventilation system.
What about you?
Burns asked.
I'll buy you some time,
she explained. We refused her order, not willing to let her sacrifice herself to buy us a mere couple of minutes.
Don't be stupid, Guerra. I'm not letting you kill yourself,
Burns said before grabbing his radio, quickly calling Connolly to alert him of the approaching danger.
Fuck, but it's not ready,
Connolly responded from the other side.
Well, just try real hard to finish it up,
Burns yelled back.
You have 10 minutes.
Marion and I both glared at Burns, knowing we hadn't the faintest chance of holding them off for 10 minutes.
10 minutes?
Marion half asked, half stated.
You know we don't have that kind of time. We'll make time. We'll lure them to the other side of the ship and keep them occupied as we circle around. If we do it right, we'll join up with Connolly just in time to get the hell out of here.
It was a one in a million kind of plan, but it was the best we had. We placed ourselves at a safe distance from the vent opening, pointing our rifles at the panel. Though we knew that our weapons wouldn't kill them, it would slow them down, and hopefully piss them off enough to follow us away from Connolly and the lifeboat.
If it doesn't work, we blow the ship. No way in hell we're letting them get to shore,
Marion ordered.
You got it, boss,
Burns responded. I agreed. I didn't wish for death, but the thought of these things roaming around back home, destroying everything we'd sworn to protect, was something we couldn't allow.
I hear them,
I said, seeing the shadow of something moving around behind the ventilation duct's access panel. With a single knock, the hinges blew off, at which point Marion ordered us to open fire. A succession of several dozen loud shots rang through the air, blowing a hole in the vent. We expected them to jump out and attack, but instead of a horrific death, we were met with silence. In an unexpected turn of events, the hybrids had fled.
Hey,
Burns asked.
Shh, I ordered. Listen.
Though there were still metallic thumps echoing through the ducts, they were getting quieter, moving away from us.
Where are they going?
Marion asked. I realized then that we'd underestimated the hybrid's ability to understand. While they might be mutated versions of the crew, it was possible that they still held faint memories, including the ship's layout. If so, they might have been heading for another exit.
Connolly!
It hit me where the sound was heading.
We need to go, now!
Taking the lead, I rushed back towards the lifeboats, not wasting time calling Connolly over the radio. I prayed that we'd get there in time to save him, but even if we did, the boat might not be ready. We could already see him from a distance, finishing up the boat, and getting ready to set it down in the water. Faint thumps could be heard coming from his direction, and from a section just above him, an access panel blew out from the wall.
Get out of there!
Marion yelled, but it was too late. Two of the hybrids had jumped down onto the deck and rushed Connolly before he had any chance to react. With bony protrusions sticking out from their chest, they just ran into him, stabbing him multiple times in his torso. Knowing Connolly had no chance of surviving the wounds, Burns started firing upon the hybrids, expecting them to charge and kill us as well. But rather than fight us back, they turned to the lifeboat. They weren't interested in us, because they finally had a chance to leave. I looked over at Marion in disbelief, but she realized it as well. They were trying to escape. Without speaking a single word, I just nodded at her, knowing it was our duty as human beings to stop them. Marion pulled a detonator from her belt. She removed the safety cap and pulled the trigger without hesitation, looking at me with sorrow in her eyes. Several loud bangs rang throughout the air as the explosives in the engine room all detonated in rapid succession. They were powerful enough to blow through the hull of the ship, ripping the deck apart before our feet. With the engine room near the back of the ship, between our position and where the lifeboat was hanging, a massive hole in the ground ripped open in front of us. The shockwave pushed us to the ground, strong enough to send the creatures flying off into the icy waters below. Hitting my head on the ground, I was left dazed, barely feeling the vast amounts of debris raining down upon us. It was a miracle on its own that I'd survived, but I remained on the ground, expecting my life to end at any moment. But then I felt someone grab onto me, pulling me back up. It was Burns, standing almost unscathed from the blast, with only a few minor rips in his suit. He yelled, barely audible over the sound of my ears ringing.
Where's Guerra?
Still dazed by the explosion, I searched my surroundings for Marion. The ship had already started to list from the massive holes in the hull. In a matter of minutes, it would be submerged underwater, marking the end of us as well as the hybrids.
Guerra!
Burns called out.
Marion!
I chimed in. Then I saw her under a large chunk of debris. The top of her suit and an arm was barely visible. Burns and I both rushed to her, pulling the metal off, only to realize the damage it had done. Her chest had been crushed by the impact, breaking her back in the process. She'd been given as merciful a death as possible, gone in the blink of an eye.
Fuck!
Burns yelled in anger. Left alone as the only two survivors, we looked back at the lifeboat, which had been slung into the ocean by the blast. But by some miracle, it remained afloat, with its rope ladder still connecting it to the ship. If we hurried, we might just have time to escape a death in the dark abyss below.
Do you see any of them?
Burns asked, referring to the hybrids. There were chunks of flesh littering what remained of the deck, including an upper torso still trying to crawl away. We hit them dead on, but with the bow of the ship ripped open, it would only be a matter of time before the rest of the hybrids emerged to hunt us down. We had to hurry.
They're gone! Come on!
I yelled. We rushed to the ladder made of rope. I paused to let Burns go first. He refused, pushing me ahead.
I'm a better shot. I'll cover you. Just go,
he ordered. Giving him a quick nod, I started climbing along the unsteady ladder, slowly descending into the lifeboat. Once I'd gotten halfway, I turned to Burns, telling him to start his own descent. With little hesitation, he followed suit. As soon as I reached the boat, I noticed a shadow appearing over the railing on deck. It was a hybrid, and it was heading for the ladder.
Burns, above you!
I yelled.
Hurry!
I raised my pistol to shoot, but with Burns in the way, I couldn't risk hitting him. The hybrid attached to the ladder, preparing to bypass it entirely by jumping onto the boat.
It's gonna jump!
I yelled. Burns, realizing the same, let go of the ladder, and let himself fall into the boat, letting out a groan as he landed on his back.
Cut the ladder!
He coughed out, but missing a knife, I was forced to shoot the ladder's attachment point. Free from the sinking vessel, we started drifting out into the ocean.
You all right?
I asked.
I think so.
He groaned, slowly getting back on his feet.
Good riddance.
Before us, we could witness the remains of RV Berea sinking into the dark abyss of the ocean, swallowing up each and every one of the horrific monstrosities left behind. I let out a sigh of relief as the burning wreckage faded away, leaving us alone in the darkness of night with a long trek ahead of us. Burns turned to me, his eyes widening with fear. Before I could ask what was wrong, he pushed me out of the way, picked his rifle up, and fired at something behind me. There, from the back of the lifeboat, one of the creatures emerged. It had probably been blown on board by the explosion, remaining as the sole escapee. Three shots were fired, all of which hit the hybrid, but they did little to slow down the creature, which latched itself onto Burns, its protruding shards of bones easily penetrating into his flesh. Knowing he'd suffer a terrible death, even if he escaped the immediate clutches of his killer, Burns gave me one last glance before pulling himself and the creature off the boat. They fell into the waters below, immediately sinking out of sight before I could even think to react. I was left there speechless, looking into the abyss below. Burns had chosen to drown rather than fight the creature and suffer the lasting effects of acute skin wasting disease. With this last act, he'd given me a second chance at life. For the next 9 hours, I navigated through chunks of drift ice in the dark. Only then did the first rays of sunlight greet me on the horizon, marking the beginning of a clear day rid of any fog. With good visuals, I finally managed to spot the outline of our freighter in the distance. I set course for it, wondering how to break the news that our entire rescue operation had failed and cost the lives of 5 great people. But as I neared the ship, I noticed something that immediately sent shivers down my spine. Hanging on the port side of the ship were the very same dinghies we'd used during our journey towards the RV Boreas. Someone had taken them back to the freighter. The hybrids, as I had already suspected, were smart. While we were preoccupied with blowing up the RV Boreas and escaping, they had captured our freighter and converted it to a hive for their wretched beings. Realizing that I had no means with which to fight them, I turned my lifeboat around, setting course for the nearest piece of land I prayed I could reach, Svalbard. I don't know if I have the fuel to reach civilization, or if I'll even get there in time. So, I'm writing down my story here, hoping that if I don't make it personally, at least someone will find my body and be warned of the horrors to come once these things reach land. I just hope the news doesn't come too late. Hey guys, thanks for listening. I want to give you all a quick heads up regarding some upcoming political ads you may start hearing leading up to this year's presidential election. These ads do not represent my own political viewpoint. So if you hear a political ad play on the podcast and it's not in my own voice, then it has absolutely nothing to do with me personally as a podcaster. Thank you again for being a dedicated listener of mine, and I can't wait to have another amazing year with you guys. I'll see you in the next episode.